Humid air will spread over most of the Midwest by this evening. Seasonable summertime temperatures will be seen across the Midwest for the remainder of the week. High temperatures today will range from the upper 70s in eastern Wisconsin to near 100 degrees across the Boot Heel of Missouri. Heat index readings will mainly be below 100 degrees. The exceptions: southern Missouri, southern Illinois, and western Kentucky, where heat index readings will get up to 115 degrees. Low temperatures tonight will range from the mid-60s in Iowa to the mid-70s across southeastern Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon: partly sunny with a high in the low 90s. The wind from the north at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight mostly clear and cooler with a low of 65. The wind will be out of the northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow mostly sunny, the high 84. The wind light and from the northeast. Thursday night mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 60s and a light east wind. Friday partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Look for a high in the mid 80s. Friday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the low in the low 70s. Saturday, partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. We'll see a high in the mid 80s. The outlook for Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low in the low 70s. And Sunday, partly sunny and warmer with a high in the upper 80s. At noon central time, temperatures ranged from the upper 70s to the mid-90s, 78 degrees at South Bend. Rockford reported 87 degrees. It was 82 at O'Hare. Bloomington reported 85 degrees at Springfield, 90. Mattoon, 89. Carbondale, 94. Lafayette reported 84 degrees, and Indianapolis and Terre Haute reported 89 degrees. At Willard Airport at the top of the hour, it was 87 degrees, the dew point 74, giving us a heat index of 95. The relative humidity, 64%. The wind out of the northwest at 12, with gusts to 17, and the barometric pressure 29.82, and steady. The sky at Willard was partly sunny at the top of the hour. Here on the campus of the University of Illinois in Urbana, 89 degrees at 12:39. There's a new kind of doctor in hospitals, a hospitalist. That's a doctor who cares for patients in a hospital instead of their personal physician. A new study finds that the popularity of these doctors doesn't necessarily do what many had hoped it would do: save money. NPR's Julie Rovner reports.
For a specialty that was basically invented in the 1990s, hospitalists have spread incredibly fast. James Goodwin is a geriatrician at the University of Texas in Galveston.
Probably 30 or 40% of patients who go in the hospital are taken care of by physicians who just work full-time in the hospital.
The idea is that because hospitalists are around the hospital all the time and familiar with the way the place works, they'd get patients taken care of better and more efficiently. Goodwin says there's evidence that's been the case.
Some of the early studies of hospitals showed that they got their patients out quicker, and how long you stay in the hospital is the major driver of costs.
But Goodwin and a colleague wanted to know what happened to those patients after they left the hospital. So they looked at the records of Medicare patients, lots of Medicare patients, and they found something surprising. Those who were cared for by hospitalists were more likely to be readmitted within 30 days or to visit the emergency room than those who were cared for in the hospital by their regular doctor.
When you expand it to all hospitalizations nationally that hospitalists are caring for, that Medicare is spending about $1 billion extra in post-hospital costs.
The main reason is that hospitalists are more likely to discharge patients to a nursing home or rehabilitation facility and less likely to send them straight home. But Joseph Lee, president of the Society for Hospital Medicine, which represents hospitalists, says the problem might be that those patients going straight home aren't getting enough care, and those going to nursing homes or other facilities are getting the right amount.
These patients are being monitored 24/7 by healthcare providers. Many of these patients being sent back are being appropriately sent back to the hospital for evaluation.
There is one thing that everyone agrees on. Hospitalists need to do a better job coordinating with patients' regular doctors. The study appears in the current issue of Annals of Internal Medicine. Julie Rovner, NPR News.
Most people look to have a personal relationship with a doctor and want to appear as a whole person, not just a collection of ailments to be fixed. But ironically, most med schools require coursework that's impersonal, especially in classes where students examine donated cadavers. A handful of med schools feel anatomy lessons should be personal by requiring students to learn more about the dead than what killed them. Illinois Public Radio's Michael Puente examines one program that does this in Gary, Indiana.
For Dr. Ernest Tallarico, a dead person is still a person, and every person has a name. Tallarico says that should remain true even when the person is being studied and dissected in a cold antiseptic exam room.
They were human beings, they are human beings, and they deserve the same respect and human dignity in death as we would give them in life.
Tallarico isn't speaking in the abstract. He's assistant director of the medical education program at Indiana University's Northwest Satellite Campus in Gary. At his campus, med school cadaver donors, as they're called in science, are not just John or Jane Doe's or numbers. Students learn the cadaver donors' names. They learn their backgrounds and how they died. They even meet the cadaver donors' families.
That's something that's not done in any other campus within the IU School of Medicine system. And it teaches things such as professionalism and respect, empathy, that we really can't teach in academia. We can't teach that in the lab. Knowing the name of the cadaver donor does that for us.
This is a remembrance service at IUN's med school facility. I'm in a section that kind of looks like an operating room. This service from earlier this year is typical. It involves students and families coming together to give thanks to the donor.
Let this be our prayer.
The med students recite poems and sing songs. Instructors and other med school officials play a role too.
We have gathered to pay our respects to the memory of these who have given the gift of their bodies for our education and to give thanks for this gift. The poet John Donne wrote, "No man is an island."
We always talk that your cadaver donor in the anatomy lab during the first year of medical school is really your first patient.
That's Lucas Beekler. He recently completed his first 2 years of medical school at IUN. He says learning about a cadaver's life, how they were and how they lived, helps students understand better how the person may have died, and it makes the specimen feel more real, sometimes too real.
Working with any patient can be an emotional roller coaster, and that's something that we need to be prepared for down the road. I mean, there may be patients in our career that we become incredibly emotionally attached to, and we need to understand how that is so that it doesn't influence us being able to give the best care that we can.
IUN has incorporated a personal touch to its medical education program for 12 years, and so far, it's alone in the Indiana University Medical Education Program. They're rare in Illinois, too. Medical experts I talked with were intrigued with this approach, but some had reservations. One of them is Dr. Elizabeth Keefe, a psychiatrist and assistant dean for student affairs at the Pritzker School of Medicine at the University of Chicago. Keefe says there's a notion that doctors lose touch with patients. She says maybe that's true, but maybe it goes too far to learn a cadaver donor's name and family ties.
I think that in encouraging students to fantasize about their cadavers, to really try to know a living person when what's before them is a scientific specimen, prevents us from engaging in the opportunity to really start to talk about this tension between what we can know and not know.
Keefe says UFC doesn't take the get-close approach as they do at IUN. She says just think about what's going through med students' minds when they finally encounter a cadaver's family.
But I do think that students in that moment are potentially vulnerable. They're certainly not doctors. They haven't had any clinical experience. They've been in a scientific laboratory, learning anatomy. And suddenly they're before a family that has all kinds of emotions about this scientific specimen that they do not have, that may have all kinds of questions about the experience that may or may not be appropriate to share.
Scientists and educators have strong thoughts about Indiana University Northwest's approach to body donation, but so do cadaver donors' families. You can get a sense of what's at stake for them by following the story of Dorothy Dot Purcell, a woman who lived most of her life in Munster, Indiana, not far from Gary. At 86 years old, Dot Purcell died from a rare kind of cancer in 2008. Shortly before that, though, Dot had agreed to donate her body to Indiana University's medical education program. The decision came too soon for Dot Purcell's husband, Jim.
She always talked about leaving her body for medical research. I used to try to discourage it. It was not a subject that I particularly wanted to address, and I didn't want to think about the specifics of it.
Dot's son, Michael Purcell, didn't like the idea either. After all, he'd heard stories about med school from his brother-in-law, a doctor.
He used to joke around how they played with one donor's brain and how it fell on the floor. And at the time, you don't think about it, but now that it's my mom who donated her body to science, it's horribly disrespectful.
But Dot's decision to donate her body was honored, and just hours after her death, the body was taken away. Jim and Micah Purcell wasn't sure where Dot's body would end up, but they never expected to hear about her again. Maybe she would go to Northwestern University, where Dot's father was a graduate, or maybe the University of Notre Dame, where Dot had attended nearby at St. Mary's College.
But we found out that they don't work it that way. They go to bodies are sent to a central distribution center, and whatever hospital needs somebody, they ship them out.
Instead, Jim heard from Dr. Tellerico at Indiana University Northwest in Gary.
It was a surprise to us when we got a letter from Dr. Tellerico saying that he had Dot's body over here.
Dot Purcell's body had its own ceremony, and that's where Jim and Michael Purcell met the med students that studied her. Son Michael Purcell says he's grateful that IUN takes this approach because most families never learn where their loved ones end up. And from his perspective, everything turned out fine.
All the students were great that we met and caring and respectful. But, you know, and from a donor's family, the more they know, the better, because not only for science, but then they're vested.
Jim Purcell says he's on the same page as his son. He says his family grew close to that med student you heard from earlier, Lucas Beekler, the young man who worked on Dot's body. Mr. Purcell says he hopes Beekler learned the right lessons working on Dot and that he and the other students achieved their future goals.
The in-depth knowledge that they have gained as a result of his program about people who die has to be of great benefit to their education in knowing that human beings are more than just a body.
Mr. Purcell says with his wife in the IUN program, it keeps her close by, and that's okay. She was never one for traveling far from home anyway. I'm Michael Puente.